MSU Today is online at SpartanPodcast.com. Here's Russ White.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today, and I'm joined by Bruce Vandenberg, Professor Emeritus of Advertising at Michigan State University. So what do we know about the spots we'll see in this year's Super Bowl?
Kind of interesting, because there are teasers out there and there are a couple of contests. So, you know, advertisers obviously are, because they're spending so much money on the Super Bowl, they're trying to get as much free earned media, as you guys say in public relations, for the week and a half before. So a lot of car ads. Car ads are back. So that kind of tells you maybe that's a barometer that the economy is coming back. A lot of, I guess we can still call them foreign car companies, Mercedes, Fiat, Hyundai, Toyota. They'll all be there. I think Chrysler will be there. I think we know now that General Motors won't. I think Ford will be there. So car ads. Sex still sells. A lot of the teasers have sex in them. And at the very moment that the car ads are going with a little bit more sex, I think the rumor is that GoDaddy.com is going the other direction for some reason. You know, marching to a different beat. Yeah. And there are contests, Doritos and Audi and so on.
Because almost they all now have an online component, right, Bruce? It's about driving the eyeballs to the internet for more,
You have to. They all have hashtags on Twitter. They all have Facebook pages. They all have, and YouTube. I mean, YouTube is really the big venue now, because they are still TV ads in a sense that we're going to see them on TV. But YouTube is really where all the eyeballs are now.
And, you know, Bruce, somehow in this age of so much demand for our attention and our shortening attention spans we keep hearing about, the Super Bowl still pulls in a huge audience, and an audience that actually pays attention to the commercials. They aren't DVRing through it. Does it still amaze you, the eyeballs it grabs?
Yeah, it amazes me, but, you know, and you've seen this in the media already, you know, it's the big corporate social event of the year, the big secular holiday. There's something in the news this year that people want Monday to be a national holiday so they can recover from the Super Bowl. So I don't know if we'll see Congress try to put that. It'll never happen. But I think people take it off anyway, so it might as well be a national holiday.
That's right. I've heard a little bit of buzz about some talk of moving it to Saturday maybe so people could recover on Sunday, but I don't know. It's so entrenched.
Well, if they get rid of the Pro Bowl the week before, that's something we don't pay attention to.
I don't think anybody would mind. But Bruce, do you think then, now the spots, the 30 seconds are fetching almost $4 million this year. Are they worth it still?
Well, you know, we've had this discussion over the years too. You know, is it $4 million for 30 seconds, or is it $4 million for 100 million people for 30 seconds? And when you start to divide 4 million into 100 million, it looks a little better than when you divide it into 30.
Yeah. Good point. Bruce Vandenberg, my guest on MSU Today, Emeritus Advertising Professor at Michigan State University. A good time to talk about the industry in general around the Super Bowl, when advertising gets more attention than it usually does. And Bruce, I mentioned earlier that we keep hearing what a short attention span many of us have now, and there is so much competition for our attention. How do advertisers go about trying to reach us these days?
That's the $64,000 question, and that's a 1960s term, 64,000. That's a $64 million question now, I think, and you know, with inflation and everything. That's a really good question, because I actually, you know, I can brag here a little bit. I have a son in the business, and he talks about it. You know, he says, we don't do ads anymore. You know, and he said, it's really hard to figure out how to organize and build strategies around all the different venues, the ambient or environmental, you know, media kind of things, the apps on the smartphones and all the different screens, your computer screen, your TV screen, your smartphone screen, the movie screen. You know, so people talk about, you know, screen number one, screen number two, screen number three, and to try to in some way, you almost can't coordinate it, but can you create some kind of engagement and participation so you get people talking? So ironically, the Super Bowl is probably the biggest social media event of the year. It's almost ready-made for the social media, even though it started back in the 1960s, because it gives people something to talk about. You know, it's the old water cooler effect, except now our smartphones are our personal water coolers. You know, so.
Well, Bruce, how would you say advertising has changed the most, you know, since you began studying it, or even in the last couple of decades?
Yeah.
The technology, I guess, is obvious, but in your mind, how has it changed the most?
Well, I mean, kids grow up now with the media and the marketing, so they're very savvy to it, and they don't like the standard canned, old-fashioned, you know, TV ad. they like things that maybe are look a little more authentic, a little bit grainy, what we would call grainier, different production values and stuff like that you find on YouTube. So it's more fun for them if they see something on YouTube that at least looks authentic. We know it's easy to, you know, kind of, you know, create those and make them look that way. So when you see something on YouTube now they're even savvy to the point is, does somebody just really manipulate that, or did that really happen? Somebody put that, you know, just happened to capture that. They just happened to capture it, has more value than if somebody kind of, you know, contrived it, basically. Yeah. So it's really tough because the big term, I think, is time shifting. You know, people now don't expect to sit down on Wednesday night to watch Disney World like, you know, maybe we did when we grew up, and then we come to school the next day, and did you see that on Disney World last night? No, they're still going to talk about it, but they will all have seen it in very different places, on different screens and in different venues. So it's really more available to them, so they can fit it into their own time schedule.
And Bruce, I've read a little bit, is a trend all about mobile, like in a lot of fields, but is it all about, you know, just buying a TV ad is apparently not enough. We got to drive something to the phones.
Yeah, and the mobile thing is interesting because I saw something the other day which really kind of brought it out to me. You know, in the United States, we have, you know, TVs, computers, smartphones, and everything. In China and other places, their smartphone is their computer. Because they can't afford a computer, they can't afford a TV set. So think of it that way, and where it's shifting in the developing countries. And so in the United States, it's, you know, it's very quick to shift to, yeah, everything's about mobile, you know, get it when you want it, where you want it, and control it as much as you can. Yeah.
And with that in mind, Bruce, what would you say kind of are the challenges and the opportunities for the advertising industry in the next couple of years?
Yeah. The challenges is how do you get in there and engage the audience? Because it's no longer one of those, you know, push the ad out to the audience. It's draw the audience in with stuff that's genuinely interesting and relevant to them. So you remember when we first had smartphones, we had a few apps. Now you go on iTunes or to the Android site, and you have thousands of apps, and they're all rated, and they're all, you know, you assume they're rated by real people. We don't know that even. But, and so now you have to select that from all of that, and the current generation is very impatient. I mean, that's another thing about time shifting. It's not just time shifting from here to over, you know, I want it when I want it. It's I want it, and I want it fast, you know. So I've had students say, you know, there's an app for East Lansing. Evidently, it'll tell you how long the lines are at the bar. So you don't have to leave your apartment and go stand online. You say, well, I'm not going to Rick's. I'm going over here because the line's shorter because I'm not willing to wait. Yeah, it's amazing.
So, Bruce Vandenberg, what skill set do the advertising students, you know, trying to hone the craft today need to get down to be successful in this field?
Right? Yeah, there's the real tough question because they need to be, you know, because they're young, so they should be more at the cutting edge than us older folks. They need some, you know, the basic computer skills. They need to be, they can. Most of them can go online. The video editing software is fairly easy to use. If they knew some computer language along with creativity, that's the big thing with digital. If you can actually write code and you're creative and artistic yourself, then you can actually do some of these, you know, things. You can create games, you can create just about anything, you know, that you can put online, apps. You know, everybody's trying to create the next, you know, winner app because, you know, even at $2 or $1.99 a piece, you can make tons of money. Games, and see how fast we go through things, you know. Angry Birds were so big, you know, at one time, and the companies, you know, Rivio or whatever that make them, and all of a sudden they can't come up with another game, you know, to kind of replace that. Farmville went through its cycles, and now it's out, you know, and so this stuff changes so fast. You know, I look at Facebook now. Facebook to me looks old. It looks a little bit passe to me. I'm wondering what's, you know, Twitter looks a little bit more there. It's quicker, you know, and you don't have to, you know, be as addicted to it as you do to Facebook. And so you just look and say, what's going to be next? You know, I would not invest my money in Facebook because I think we're getting close to somebody's going to come up with something else. But I don't know what that is. Yeah. Talking about what your students have, flexibility. I mean, to really be able to, you know, we call it what, low obstacles to associative thinking. But they really have to be able to come up with maybe even bigger ideas than you had on TV, because then you have to go out. You got to get the companies that are actually going to build this. A little bit like, you know, making a movie. It's that kind of thing. You have a lot more people. You have a lot more technology. And it changes. And things can go wrong very quickly and very easily.
Well, Bruce Vandenberg, just as we close, I mean, assess one more time for us where you see advertising as 2013 gets going and where is it headed?
I'm so, you know, we know it's mobile, we know apps, we know things that you can access, you know, on your on that screen. Are we going to see different screens? I don't know. You know, we're caught between the computer, the tablet, and the smartphone. So do the smartphones get a little bit bigger? Do the tablets get, you know, where do the screens go? That's your mobile stuff. I mean, when I was in Paris, I was taking pictures with my iPad, and a lot of other people were standing around taking pictures with their iPad or with their phones, basically. So I think that's where we're going. How do advertisers use that? They've got to come up with things that are not what we call advertising, things that create interest. We're back to this old-fashioned, you know, kind of why do you read a book? Why do you go to a movie? You know, why do you do anything? Because people are going to make those choices, and they're going to avoid everything else that doesn't just is not interesting and authentic to them.
It'll be fascinating to watch. Bruce, thanks for joining me on MSU Today.
Okay, fun again. Let's do it again next year.
That's old friend Bruce Vandenberg, Emeritus Professor of Advertising at Michigan State University, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today. Please visit us at SpartanPodcast.com.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. We'll have more in a moment.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to a half a million Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today with MSU alumna Jody Lamb. Jody, welcome back to campus.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so great to be here and to be back on campus. It really is. I wish I could stay a little while longer.
Well, Jody is the author of a book called Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool, in which Jody sensitively handles the complicated dynamic that is the alcoholic mother. Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool, from Scribe in 2012, is about a 12-year-old, socially awkward, straight-A student who's plan, Operation Cool, is to reinvent herself. So, Jody, tell us more about that, and what's the book about?
Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool, is a middle grade novel, so it's written for ages 8 to 13. Like you said, it's about a girl who's trying to reinvent herself, and her plan is derailed as she copes with her depressed and alcoholic mother. And it's really a story of coming of age and fitting in and coping with very common family struggles, which is an alcoholic family. And so I hope that readers are inspired by the Easter character's determination and hope. And I wrote it because I grew up in a large, lovable, wonderful family in which alcoholism is a problem. And so I know this story would have moved me as a tween. And I know there are millions of children across the U.S. and the world who will also be moved by it.
And tell me more about the inspiration for the book, because I believe it happened when you were at MSU in the library one evening. Tell us what happened.
Well, you know, my growing up, I always thought that the problem of alcoholism was unique to my family, because it was like very typical in most families. It was a family secret that nobody talked about. And even here at Michigan State, I only told my best friend. My other friends here had no idea I had these problems because I was ashamed. And one evening in the summer or the fall of 2004, it was my second to last semester here while I was studying journalism, I realized that my very dearest loved ones who were alcoholics had hit rock bottom. And one day after class, I walked to the MSU library, and for the first time, you know, in 21 years of dealing with these problems, I studied alcoholism. And I was absolutely astounded by what I discovered, that it's an extremely common problem across the country and the world. And when I read the statistic that an estimated 1 in 4 children lives with at least one parent who abuses alcohol, I was stunned. And I thought, how could this be the 21st century and it's still such a secret? And it bothered me that I couldn't find any contemporary effective books on the subject. I had tweens in my family who I thought could really benefit from reading books on the subject and realizing they weren't alone, and I couldn't find any. And that really bothered me. But I was marching forward with my career in PR and in journalism, and I graduated in May 2005 and got very busy in my career and was traveling a lot on business. And I didn't think that there was anything that I could do to affect that problem or help it in some way. And so I marched forward with my career, and I always sort of thought about that. And then when I was 26, in the summer of 2009, I had a complete quarter-life crisis. And people always kind of giggle when I say that phrase. But for me, it was a real crisis, because even though I was doing well in my career and got a lot of satisfaction out of helping organizations and companies achieve their communication goals, I really longed for a sense of purpose beyond that. And one weekend, I read all of my childhood diaries, and I cried because I thought that even though I was doing well in my career, the little kid version of me would be very disappointed in how grown-up me turned out, because I had these grand aspirations for starting a good cause organization and doing something new every day, even if I had the flu. That's what I wrote. And so I thought, I really need to do something. And when I was a girl, I really enjoyed writing creative stories. In fact, I would write these screenplays for my toys to act out, and I would solve problems for those families the way that I probably wished I could in my own. And so I thought, I'm going to start writing creatively. And even though I was writing every day and using my journalism degree from Michigan State very well, it wasn't the same. And so the next week, I enrolled in a creative writing course at my local community college, and I started writing short stories. And out quickly came the story of Easter Ann Peters, Who Has a Plan, and I almost didn't turn it in because I thought, surely if I have a degree from Michigan State, my instructor, who is a wonderful, accomplished author herself, would be expecting something more sophisticated. But thank goodness I turned it in, and several of my classmates, some of whom were only 17 years old, told me, you really had to keep going. And so I did.
Jody Lamb is my guest on MSU Today, author of Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool. And Jody, what would you say is maybe the biggest myth or misunderstanding you'd like to clear up about alcoholism in families?
Alcoholism today still remains a family secret. So people think that an alcoholic is the person on the street who doesn't want a job, and a lot of children hear that word associated with people who are refusing help. They don't often think about alcoholics being wonderful people who are very active in communities and seem to have everything together, because so much happens behind closed doors. And children who grow up in a home where alcoholism or any kind of addiction is a problem are much more likely to experience various types of abuse. And you know, as you know, that definitely is a buried secret in a lot of families. And so I think today it's the 21st century. We have more opportunity than ever before to start the conversation. People who are not affected by alcoholism should make their children aware, and if everyone starts talking about it, people who really need help will step up and get it, because they'll realize that they're not alone in their struggles.
What is the best way, Jody Lamb, for a young person or anyone hearing our conversation, if they need to reach out in some way on this in alcoholism? What's your suggestion?
Young people should turn to an adult that they trust in their lives, whether it's a teacher or another family member, and let them know what's going on in their homes. For anyone, they should look at Al-Anon family groups. It's a wonderful support group for family members of alcoholics and other addicts. And I started going to that group just a few years ago when I found myself in this quarter-life crisis, and boy, I wish I had known about it and gone very earlier. I would have received a lot of strength from talking about the problem and getting to know others and learning how they coped with such problems.
And Jody, is Easter Ann Peters' Operation Cool a hopeful, positive book, and summarize what you hope readers take from it?
It is a very hopeful book, and I've been so pleased to hear feedback from readers who say, you know, I have read some books on the subject, but you've done something different here. A lot of those books are very dark and difficult to read because you feel so badly for the characters experiencing that. And I wanted to make sure that the character Easter is very relatable. So even though she is going through problems at home with her mother, she's also a girl forging ahead with fitting in and going through your typical everyday struggles at school. She even has a bully. And so I think readers can really identify with her, with the character. And because there isn't so much emphasis on what's going on at home, readers can handle it. They know that that Easter, in the end, is going to find her way. And in the end, Easter and her family are on the road to recovery. And so it is a very hopeful ending.
And what do you hope they take from it, the main point, do you think?
Yeah, I hope that readers are inspired by Easter's determination to find a solution and by her hope. For readers who don't have alcoholics in their lives, I hope that this story fosters an understanding about alcoholism as a disease and maybe some sensitivity to what their friends, classmates, neighbors, teammates might be going through at home.
Jody Lamb, what is the best way for people to get a copy of Easter and Peter's Operation Cool?
The book is available at on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and some bookstores. It's also available in the Kindle store as an ebook. And on my website, JodyLamb.com, you can also find additional resources for places to find help if you're a young person or anyone who's affected by alcoholics or other addicts.
And what's next for you, as I'm sure you're not done with this crusade? What's next?
I really wish I could clone myself because I feel such urgency in writing more and I enjoy it so much. So I'm currently working on a sequel to the Easter and Peter's story, that's for a slightly older audience. But I also have some nonfiction books in the works that are designed to help children deal with very tough subjects, including living with an alcoholic. And I hope some way to provide those books at no cost to children. So that's my next big endeavor.
and tell people how you'd like them to stay in touch with you, social media or email. How can people stay up with what you're doing?
I would love, love, love to hear from my fellow Spartans and anyone in the community. I am on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, basically any social media that's out there. You can find me there. And all of those links are on my website, JodyLamb.com.
And last question, Jody, as we sort of switch gears. You're a public relations, you know, professional, and you cut your teeth at MSU, PRSSA, at MSU, where we're talking. I'm sort of wondering, a two-part question, what sort of has changed most about the business? I know we could have a three-day conference on that, but by the time you've been in it, how has PR sort of changed? And what's it like now that you're kind of the client and the vendor using all those skills that are always changing to promote yourself and your own book now?
Boy, PR is an exciting world right now. And I feel so fortunate to have had my MSU experience because my journalism professors here and my other instructors really pushed me and really gave me solid writing skills and enough confidence when I graduated to know that I had, that I could write, and confidence to adapt, because at that point it was the beginning of the transformation of PR. And I feel so fortunate to have been a part of this growth and me growing as the world has evolved. And so I think now it's a more exciting time than ever in PR. We have the ability to hear directly from our target audiences. And now it's even more about creating a great story because we have to compete for the attention. There's so much out there. So as far as the book goes, I think that's one of the main reasons why I've been able to I was able to find a publisher. This book was rejected 30 times by agents and editors who told me, you know, the story is good and the voice is great and, you know, we applaud you for what you're trying to champion here, but realistic fiction is not easy to sell. And they advised that I focus on something more action-packed like wizards and vampires, and obviously that doesn't fit. And so the publisher who finally told me, well, I believe in you and your story, said, I appreciate that you have a PR background and you can obviously, you've shown passion with your other clients and organizations you worked for. Certainly, you're going to have a lot of passion behind this. And so I think that was instrumental in me being able to see this book become published and get it into the hands of kids who need it.
Jody, thank you for joining me on MSU Today.
Thank you so much.
That's Jody Lamb, and there's more at jodylamb.com, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. We'll have more in a moment.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to Greening the Great Lakes Daniel Malone, who's the Senior Vice President of Distribution and Customer Operations for Consumers Energy. Among many of Dan's tasks, he has responsibility for the company's electric and gas distribution systems, energy operations, and customer operations, among others. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit. Your responsibilities are quite wide-ranging. It's kind of rather amazing. But let's talk about some recent news. Back in December, I believe, consumers announced the plans for a 700-megawatt natural gas-powered plant in Genesee County. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we'll be filing our certificate of necessity with the Michigan Public Service Commission here this year. We'll look to start construction in 2015 and have the plant in operation on 2017. This is a 700-megawatt gas-fired plant, and it's basically going to backfill some of the load with some of the EPA requirements for the Clean Air Act. We'll be shutting down some of our older fossil units, so this will help backfill some of that load. With natural gas prices, it'll also be one of the most effective and efficient plants that we can bring, and cost-effective plants to our customers.
Yeah, major commitment in natural gas. Consumers has already made a major commitment to renewables. This whole natural gas phenomenon, though, I mean, what's your take on that as we look forward? Obviously, Consumers is excited about natural gas.
Yeah, we are very excited about the natural gas. Consumers operates essentially the second largest gas storage fields in the nation. That helps our customers because we can buy gas when it's cheaper and be able to put it in the ground and bring it back to our customers at a better value to them. But the fracking phenomenon is bringing the natural gas and the prices. We believe it is real, and it is going to keep the natural gas prices down.
We've done a lot of programs looking at hydraulic fracturing, and Michigan has done historically an excellent job of monitoring that to make sure that there's no environmental degradation associated with that.
Yeah, that's correct. And Michigan does have some opportunities, particularly up north in the Kalkaska County area. There are some opportunities for fracking. There is some drilling, actually, that's going on up there. But, yeah, Michigan and the companies in Michigan have done a very, very good job. The key thing with fracking that you have to watch is the disposal of the wastewater that's utilized in the fracking process. And if that's disposed of properly, fracking can be done very safely, very economically, and bring very low price
gas. And some states have done a better job of that than others, and Michigan has done an excellent job of that.
Michigan has done an outstanding job of that, and there are some others that haven't done as good a good job of that, but they are working, and I think you'll see that there'll be a little bit more in the way of monitoring and regulation on that, and that's probably good for the industry.
Dan, your background at Purdue is in environmental sciences, mm-hmm. and certainly Consumers has made the commitment to the renewable portfolio standards. What about renewables? You're going to hit the 10%. Are we going to ramp that up as time goes by, or is that sort of a question mark right now?
Well, we'll follow the energy law. In 2008, when the energy law came out, it required 10% of your portfolio by 2015 to be renewables. At that time, when that law first came out, Consumers had the largest amount of renewable energy in the state of any of the utilities at 4%, and that's primarily from our hydroelectric dams. So what we actually have done on Thanksgiving Day went commercial, our first wind farm over in Mason County. We are planning a second one in Tuscola County. That will come on
up in the thumb.
That will come on in 2015, and that will take us over that 10% mark. Okay, so we'll have that. As the energy law dictated is, let's get the law to 2015. Let's look at the jobs that were created. The Granholm administration was one of the big things, was to create the jobs from this industry.
Right.
Let's look at what that's done. Let's look at the energy prices, and then we'll look at the mix. So I think the governor here in his recent State of the State talked about an energy policy and an energy statement coming out, and he once again reaffirmed his commitment to the law and to do some studies and look going forward. So I think we'll see it, that there'll be a further evaluation that'll occur just short of 2015.
Yeah, and the governor's statement on energy and the environment, a very measured approach mm-hmm. to looking for a higher portfolio standard, which I think makes good sense.
Because, absolutely.
Particularly with the natural gas phenomenon going on right now.
It's the cheapest, next to energy efficiency, it's actually the cheapest energy source we can bring to bear.
Well, speaking of energy, you've got a strong background yourself personally in nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear is a tougher thing politically, public perception, et cetera. Where is consumers with nuclear right now?
Well, consumers originally operated two power plants. It was the Big Rock Point plant, which we have subsequently decommissioned. That was up in Charlevoix. We also own the Palisades plant over in Covert. We actually sold that plant to Entergy, who has been the operator of that plant since, I think it was 2006 when we sold that plant to Entergy, and they've been operating that plant and operating it effectively. And we buy all the power from that plant, and it is a good value when the plant is up and it's operating to us. It's very tough for a utility that has one nuclear plant to be able to operate that and operate it effectively. I'll tell you, Detroit Edison actually has been doing that well with the Fermi plant. But we thought it was in the best interest of our customers to let Entergy, who operates, you know, tens of power plants, let them operate it and then buy the power.
It's one thing, Dan, to produce the power. It's another thing to deliver it to customers. That's
absolutely
part of your responsibility as well. The governor mentioned some infrastructure problems we have, particularly in the Upper Peninsula, but mm-hmm. we're in pretty good shape in the Lower Peninsula. Am I right in what he was saying? And
yeah.
Was he right?
Yeah, no, the governor is right. And in the Upper Peninsula, it's basically the transmission feed into the Upper Peninsula coming in, and it comes in through one feed. So he is looking at what can we do to bring an additional transmission up into the Upper Peninsula. The Lower Peninsula is in pretty good shape. What we do have to understand, though, is that Michigan is a peninsula, and we don't have as many feeds coming in as some of the other states. But the transmission system in the state is robust. It's very effective, and so is the distribution system. The reliability of such has been improving. Consumers has increased our reliability by 24% to our customers in the last 5 years through infrastructure investment back into the state of Michigan, and we're going to continue to do so. We'll be investing essentially about $6.4 billion over the next 5 years back into the state of Michigan, both in gas and the electric business.
One of the other things you do, another hat you wear, you're Consumers Energy's point person on MEDC's Pure Michigan Business Connect. What is Pure Michigan Business Connect for our listeners who may not be aware of it?
Yeah, Pure Michigan Business Connect was actually a program announced by the governor up at the Detroit Chamber up on Mackinac Island, and that'll be 2 years ago in June. And what this program is, and it was originally Consumers Energy, DTE, Varnum Law, and Huntington Bank. And basically it was a program that we would look to insource other contracts to Michigan-based companies. So when we do it a competitive bid, we might not have had a Michigan content, a Michigan company, a Michigan service within those bids. This focuses us, and we changed our policies to require that we have a Michigan company. So we would then look at it and say they still have to be effective. They have to be cost effective and bring a quality product because we have to bring value to our customers. But what we'll do then is put these out for bid, give that Michigan company a contract that might have otherwise went out state. And let me give you one example. It was one of our environmental modifications for one of our Karn facilities up in Bay City. We bought the steel out of a company out of Jackson. We trucked it on a Michigan company over to Onaway, Michigan. Moran Armors fabricated it. Then we moved it back and put it in with Michigan labor. The entire modification was done with Michigan-based products, Michigan-based labor, and Michigan-based service. Otherwise, it would have went out of the state. So what we're doing right now is trying to focus on getting that business back to Michigan. Consumers' original commitment was $250 million over 5 years. We doubled that in September to $500 million. At this time, we're at $456 million in contracts written.
Close.
So the next question here.
Close.
Well, that's
you're going to go over.
We're going to go over. That's in about 20. You figure about 20 months, mm-hmm. and we got three more years. So
wow.
we'll probably be changing that. The big thing for us is not just doing money back into Michigan businesses; it's jobs. Mike Finney from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, who we partnered with to bring this program to bear. Says that for every $250,000 invested into a Michigan company, that brings another job. So if you think in terms of $500 million, think about the number of jobs that that'll be able to create.
So MEDC's role really is to help people like consumers to identify those other suppliers. I mean, that's their role.
Absolutely, that is MEDC's role. And they actually have a database. Michigan businesses can register on this database. It puts them in a network then that we actually go on and search and look for companies. And we also enable those companies on that database to look at work that we have coming up that they may be able to bid Consumers has also ran three forums in Lansing where we've brought vendors in to meet with our engineers and the MEDC to talk about the program and to do business with those companies.
Yeah, let's talk about, let's go to the consumer side of some of the work that you do. And customer services, you know, I for one am a beneficiary of one of your great customer services. I have an electric vehicle and I have a 240 charging station that consumers paid for. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
But a lot of things along the lines of energy, you call it energy optimization.
Mm-hmm.
What is energy optimization? And you make a differentiation between efficiency and conservation, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, energy efficiency is looking at differing products, putting insulation into your home that will able to save usage. Conservation means that you're going to make a conscious effort to turn your thermostat down. You are going to make a conscious effort to use less electricity. Other efficiency, once again, goes back to more efficient products, whether it's a furnace, whether it's a compact fluorescent light bulb, whether it's greater insulation in your home.
So I can put a shower head in that's more water efficient, but if I take shorter showers and change my behavior, I'm doing both.
You're doing both, absolutely.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that customers may not be aware of. You recently put out something for your customers called the top 10 home energy myths, and I'll just start with one, and that's the whole business of phantom power or standby power. When an appliance is turned off, it is off, not necessarily true.
That's correct. That's not necessarily true. So that appliance is sitting there, it's plugged in, and maybe that's your stove, and you have an electric range and stove. Yes, it is sitting there, and it's not on at that time. But there is current still flowing into that, and that is that phantom power. And that unit is using that. Actually, if you look at most small appliances, 75% of the energy consumption goes to phantom power. So, and then you think about stereo systems and et cetera, they're all drawing power. So when they're off, they're not actually off. The best thing you can do, unplug them, and I know that gets to be a pain, but use a surge, like a surge protector, power strip. If you put it in that and you turn that off, that will shut the power off. So you'll be able to save that energy that would otherwise be going to an appliance that's actually just sitting there doing nothing.
See, a question I was going to ask, how do you know which appliances are using phantom? Do you assume, since a lot of them do, that they all do?
Yeah, virtually all of them do. Virtually all of them will have some load on it, whether it's a phone charger, albeit small. It still is drawing power. It is connected into that circuit. So those electrons are going in just by the virtue of the fact that it's plugged in. And it is drawing, and those electrons are going in and going back out.
So we have, most of us have power strips and surge protectors on our computers. So don't let your computer go to standby. Just shut the power strip off.
Just shut the power strip off. And there's lots of people that go back and forth with, does it cost more in the way of power to start something up? There's always that surge. And for large motors, there is a big surge when you start a large motor up. But for most appliances, that's just a little bump. And it's much more effective to turn it off and turn it back on. It'll save energy.
And I do leave my phone charger plugged in, like, all through the night. So it's just, again, changing behaviors.
Yep.
And just making the effort to unplug or turn off that power strip.
Absolutely, and most of us do. I used to do the exact same thing until we actually started getting into looking at more of the energy efficiency. And now, yeah, I unplug my phone charger.
Dan, it's been a bit cold lately, and the people are messing with their thermostats a lot, up and down and all around.
Yep.
Give us a couple of myths on the thermostat.
Yeah, a couple things on the thermostats. A lot of people say that it uses more energy, or you can heat your home up faster or cool it down faster. If you walk in and you turn your air conditioner down because it's really hot in the house, it's 75 when you came in, so you crank it down to 62. It's going to get cooler faster. Or on the reverse when heating it up. No, that's not the case. Your furnace or your air conditioner will heat and cool at the same rate no matter what. So if you walk in and it's 75, it's going to be 75. If you set it to 72, it's going to take the same amount of time as if you set it down to 65. Chances are when you set it down to 65, it's going to go all the way down to 65. And then you'll realize, and then you'll turn it back up, and then the home will heat back up. So just set it to the temperature you want, and let it sit there.
I'm talking with Dan Malone, who's Senior Vice President of Distribution and Customer Operations for Consumers Energy. Let's talk about lighting. That's one that's somewhat confusing to a lot of people. I mean, we've got incandescent bulbs, we've got compact fluorescents, we've got LED lighting. I mean, what do we do with our lighting?
Yeah, actually, the compact fluorescent bulbs are very, very good. Our energy efficient programs to date have provided rebates on 5.3 million compact fluorescent light bulbs right now. They do use a tremendous amount or provide a tremendous amount of energy savings. If you think about the typical 60-watt light bulb, you'll see them in the stores. That'll be 15 watts or 8-watt light bulbs. So every one of those watts, that savings that are being produced. If you look at a light bulb over a year's period of time, going from a standard compact or fluorescent light bulb to a compact fluorescent light bulb, from an incandescent to a compact fluorescent, you'll save about $10 per year just changing that one light bulb out. And the light bulbs last a lot longer.
They do.
I've
noticed that in my own home. And the LED lighting is sort of the next wave of technology.
Yeah, right? It is the next wave of technology. They're very effective. They're very bright. And it's called an experience curve when you have a price that starts off high because of the technology and then slowly comes down over time, sometimes a little more rapidly. What you're seeing is that price coming down. People went out and started looking at LEDs when they first came out and said, wow, they are really expensive. And they are. But if you think about a ceiling, one of the can lights that are in the ceiling, the recessed lights, originally that bulb was coming out, and then they come as a unit, was $80. That's down to $20 already in just a short period of time. And the light is clean, it's crisp, it's very conducive to your homes and provides a great deal of savings.
Well, I've been on your website, and it's very robust, and people can get a lot more in terms of energy efficiency, energy conservation. Mm-hmm. But where can folks go for this information, Dan?
You can go on to our website, and what you'll find on our website under the energy efficiency area of our website is information about our programs. Over 1 million residential customers and 68,000 business customers have taken advantage of our energy efficiency programs. We have instant rebate coupons that you can print right off of there. We also have links to other information. There is some stuff back into the Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. government, that shows and provides energy saving tips. Additionally, you can go through that and have us come out and do a home energy assessment at your home, and we can do those very effectively, very quickly, and give you tips. Things to keep in mind is if you look at from a home heating and energy, 50% of the energy loss out of a home is due to insulation or poor roofing. That's always a great place to start. If you look at the rest of your home, another 20% of your home goes to your appliance load. So how can you be more efficient? High-efficiency furnaces. There are furnaces nowadays that are running 30 to 40% more efficiency. So you think about your gas usage. So starting there, you can find virtually every one of your needs. There'll be some sort of a link or information that you would be able to need, or be able to provide rebates, or be able to hook you up with one of our contractors.
But to reiterate, for our listeners out there, the first thing you want to do is that audit.
Do that home energy efficiency audit. That's absolutely the best and the first thing you can do.
My guest is Daniel Malone, Senior Vice President of Distribution and Customer Operations for Consumers Energy. Dan, it's been a pleasure having you on Greening of the Great Lakes.
All right. Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Please find us on Facebook by searching for Greening of the Great Lakes and follow us on Twitter at Green Michigan.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class, 4 great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes. Lansing, Michigan-based O'Leary Paint received gold, silver, and bronze honors from Coatings Research Group, Inc. this spring. The research group tested regional, national, and international paint products, and O'Leary products were rated the highest of all 31 paints tested. David O'Leary is president of O'Leary Paint.
Well, we're just really proud to be able to be recognized in a national study that our products came in first, second, and third. It's unusual, and to think that a small guy like that can present in a national study that well, it's pretty unusual. It's never happened before where the same company took first, second, and third. And we've tested very well several times, and then we kind of keep it a secret. And this one put us over the top where it was really worthy of some distinction, where people were calling us from around the country saying they've never seen a study like that.
We belong to a lab group called CRGI, or Coatings Research Group, and it's a lab group of 30 paint companies worldwide. And they test all our raw materials and do the paint testing for us. So we have an independent lab, test our products, and we get a yardstick on how we're doing versus the market. And it's not, rather than us doing the testing, it's an independent lab, so we can trust the results we're getting.
That's O'Leary paint chemist Scott Bauer, who adds,
well, the rankings tell you is that we can produce just as good or better coating than all these large companies that have a giant staff of chemists. Since we're a smaller company, we need to be just as good or better because we don't have the name to push our paint. We have to have the quality behind our product and in the can to make sure that we don't have any problems.
No single paint company has ever taken the top three spots in this rating, says O'Leary.
Well, our focus has always been on the painter, the contractor industry, and they tend to be very knowledgeable about what they're using. And they didn't need us to tell us that they made a quality product. They know firsthand. But for a homeowner, if you're only doing a project once every 4 years, it's really hard to know. And you rely on studies like this to tell you what kind of a product you're using because you don't have that experience.
Winning first, second, and third place respectively, O'Leary's Duramax 90 line, ceramic coat, and micro-spec paints are locally produced in Lansing, Michigan.
And we manufacture our own paint here. We're the largest paint manufacturer that makes house paint in the state of Michigan. Family-owned, and we produce everything right here. So, and we do all our research in the lab and make our own products. So we are producing all our products here for the Michigan market, and everything is formulated in this state and is meant for our climate because it is manufactured here and it is all tested here. So we're not making paint for the whole country. We're making paint for Michigan and northern Indiana. So I am trying to formulate coatings that match our climate and weather our climate very well.
As the largest house paint manufacturer in the state, O'Leary Paint outshone national brands such as Behr and Sherwin-Williams in the 2012 National Paint Ranking. Rating criteria included stain blocking, adhesion, water resistance, and washability, and O'Leary did not receive a poor rating in any category, the only brand to do so.
Bigger isn't necessarily better. We've got the same tools and technology that anybody does, and if you focus on a goal of making a quality product, you can surpass anybody in the industry. It's not that different from a bakery or a restaurant. The largest restaurant doesn't necessarily make the best food. If that were the case, then I think the United States military would be the best restaurant in the country. So I think if you care about quality and you can and we have the raw materials that are available, we can compete with anybody in the world. And we have. And I think that this is proven.
All three of O'Leary's winning products are certified as environmentally responsible paints by GreenWise Paint, a division of Coatings Research Group, Inc.
The big thing now is to make paint greener, lower VOC, which is volatile organic compounds, which evaporate into the air and can produce smog. So we're trying to eliminate or reduce the amount of these because there's a new green building code called LEED. So everybody's trying to get their buildings LEED certified. So we're trying to reduce that amount, be it keep the performance of the coating. Because we can make a zero VOC coating. A lot of times the performance of these zero VOC coatings isn't as good as it is with the conventional VOC. So what we're trying to do is make a midpoint, a very good quality, low odor with a small amount of VOC, because if we get rid of all the VOC, a lot of times we're starting to lose our performance.
Bauer says quality is the main thing to keep in mind anytime you're embarking on a painting project.
I guess the bigger thing you need to do, you need to buy top quality paint. Everybody makes different lines of paint, and your time is very valuable, and you want your paint to last a long time and look very good. The more you spend on your paint, the better quality coating you're going to get for the money. You're going to have better stain resistance, better durability, better look, better application properties, better hiding, so it should take you less time to put it on and it should look much better and last much longer.
Learn more about O'Leary Paint at O'LearyPaint.com. I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from The Spartan Life. Jim Tooman is a world-renowned motivational speaker, philosopher, and personal coach who has touched more than 2 million lives with his powerful message of self-acceptance, tolerance, and hope. So you can imagine my excitement at the prospect of meeting this exceptional Michigan State University alumnus at our 2012 Alumni Association Grand Award celebration. Jim turned out to be just what I expected, a humble guy who was much more interested in talking about me than talking about himself. He was gracious. His remarks were inspiring. He hung around until the last guest had left. And this week, he sent me a thank you note. It's entitled, On This Day, and it's perfect for this week's message. On this day, mend a quarrel. Search out a forgotten friend. Dismiss a suspicion and replace it with trust. Write a letter to someone who misses you. Encourage a youth who has lost faith. Keep a promise. Forget an old grudge. Examine demands on others and vow to reduce them. Fight for a principle. Express your gratitude. Overcome an old fear. Take 2 minutes to appreciate the beauty of nature. Tell someone you love them. Tell them again, and again, and again. Jim concluded this with, "Thank you for touching my life." Whoever you are, wherever you are, all of these things Jim Tooman suggests are within your reach. Try modeling this behavior for a week and watch what happens. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
Well, the University Research Corridor is a collaboration among Michigan State University, University of Michigan, and Wayne State.
That's Michigan State University President Luana Simon.
People of Michigan have made an extraordinary investment in us, but no institution can do everything. And we need to use our visibility and our cachet to advance the state of Michigan and its people. And the URC is a vehicle to do that.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
It's not that it's the only game in town, but it is a game in town that brings, we hope, a spotlight to Michigan and also tells the people of Michigan that we are committed to using the investment they've made in us to try to move the state forward.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alma mater.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises
alumni.msu.edu. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.